Your name, please?
Andy Griffith.
And your position and occupation?
Well, I don't... It depends. Sometimes I'm an actor. Well, if I'm in a play or a picture, well, I'm an actor. Otherwise, I'd be working what we call on the floor. That is, just standing up with a microphone before an audience, and that's an entertainer.
But Mr. Griffith, do you think that the quality of entertainment, by and large, is getting better or getting worse?
Well, my viewpoint is, I don't know. I think it goes in cycles, just like everything else does. It's changing all the time.
This is Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with another distinguished and well-known personality who will reveal to you, the American public, what he holds to be the responsibilities of his position in American life. Produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a public service by this station. Mr. Kennedy's guest today is Andy Griffith, popular star of stage, screen, and records. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Mr. Griffith. I'm glad to have this chance to talk with you about the field of entertainment. Do you think that entertainment has a great influence on the lives of people?
Oh, I certainly do.
What's the point behind entertainment, if there is one?
I just fell into the entertainment business, so I never really studied what went on before in the history of it so much. But it seems to me that entertainment probably came of a need. Somebody needed to laugh one time in the way back yonder. And so somebody pulled a little joke, and it made them laugh. And the kings and all used to have their jesters. And people have to laugh, and people have to depart from their own personal problems sometimes, or they have to find something in entertainment that they can identify their problems and their happiness with, it seems to me.
Why do you feel that they need to do this?
It's the nature, I believe, of the human animal not to be able to go it by himself.
How does entertainment and the kind of entertainment that brings laughter unite people, bring them together?
Oh, laughter's universal. Laughter is just as universal as it can be. And two people who can't speak the same language, if they can find some way to communicate with themselves, some funny way with their hands, or some funny little joke to play on one another, well, then that unites them.
You think there's a depth of understanding that comes through laughter?
Oh, I think so. For instance,
yes.
Now I was in a play one time called No Time for Sergeants, and there was one scene in that play. And I always did love that scene. There was one scene in that play where the colored lieutenant walked out on the stage, and me and Ben were standing on the stage, and Ben was stomping on his hat. He wanted to get in the infantry. And the lieutenant says, "Don't you know enough to, what he was destroying government property, you know?" And Ben was saluting, and I didn't salute. My mouth was open, just looking at him. And he went off, and Ben got after me. He said, "Don't you know enough to salute an officer when you see one?" And I said, "You know he talks whiter than I do." The audience just laughed and carried on, but it was truth, you see.
Yeah.
He did. And to me, humor that's based on truth like that is a wonderful thing, because people can not only laugh at and with you, but they can find a truth there. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
You mean find a truth so that they see their own situation more clearly?
So they can see their situation and world situations and all kinds of situations. Another thing, too, whether it is laughter or whether it's sadness or whatever it might be, if it's a good play, people come in to the theater as individuals. But while they are there, and immediately afterwards, they are all one person. There is a oneness between them and the people performing on the stage.
Do you have any notion in your mind as to what the person's like that you're talking to while you're entertaining?
Yes, as a matter of fact. There is a sense that, I don't know whether you're born with it or whether you develop it or what, but when I first started out, I worked in nightclubs all around the country, and what I used to do was before I ever went on, I'd get in the back of the audience and stand there for a little while, and I could tell how they felt that particular night. Now, the same group of people might feel a different way the next night, but that particular night, they felt a certain way. And they kind of, is exude a good word there? I believe it is. They exude a kind of attitude.
And this is something you just simply sense and feel.
Yes, right.
Can't really describe why it should be.
No, that's true.
About it.
And the same thing, and I used to do that in No Time for Sergeants, too.
You mean in the same theater, for example, the group one night will be quite different from the group another night when they start?
Yes, indeed.
How about if you're successful when the play is over? Is the group one night similar to the group the next night?
They're always a little bit different.
Do you take them from divergent points of view and divergent feelings and bring them to a mood and an attitude which is relatively similar?
Yes, you try to do that. Can't say you always do it, but try to do it, and a lot of times it works.
Interesting, isn't it, why there should be a mood to a crowd? I can see where moods between individuals would vary, but what happens when a group gets together? Almost like mob psychology, isn't it?
Yes, I don't know. I don't know why it is. I just know it is. You must have experienced the same thing speaking before groups of people.
Oh, yes.
And maybe sometimes sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's just right. I don't know. It's a wonderful mystery, and I've thought about it a whole lot. I've thought about it a whole lot, and I'm here to say that I don't know the answer.
I do find, though, in talking with some entertainers and actors and actresses, that they're very, very reluctant to say a play should have a message in itself. They should start off with the idea, I will try to make people better, or I will try to do such and so.
Well, some plays are just set down to say to have a message in them. A Face in the Crowd, a picture that I did one time, was done primarily as a message. It had a message, and it had a point of view, and the whole picture was geared and aimed at that point of view. Now, while another thing that I did one time, No Time for Sergeants, was it was primarily a comedy. And what little point of view that we put in there was the Christ-like quality of this man, Will Stockdale. What I mean by Christ-like was that this man accepted the world, and he wanted to help. He wanted to do the right thing at all times.
How about the business of acting a part which is not yourself, over and over and over again? Is it hard to keep yourself separated from the character you're creating?
Yeah, I think that comes with age, though. When I first started out in the business, I couldn't keep separated what I was doing from myself at all. I just couldn't do it. I had a terrible time, especially in facing the crowd. But along with age and a little bit more experience, you kind of learn to when you finish the day's work, to forget it a little bit. However, when you do anything, you're bound to absorb a part of it. You're just bound to absorb a little bit of it.
Well, I think this would be true if you're going to do any kind of a job in it yourself.
Well, like a carpenter works with his hands, and he just naturally gets calluses on his hands. Yeah. I used to have some good calluses on mine. I'm kind of ashamed of them now. But so the same thing is bound to go when you're doing something with your mind and with your emotions. They're bound to absorb some of that.
Is the quality of the personality of the actor essential to his business? Because I'm concerned about a man's religion and his faith. Does it make any difference in his business what he believes or what he thinks or what he is, as long as he's a skillful and good performer?
I believe so. Now, I know performers who don't believe in God. They're good performers. They're warm performers. Now, I know other performers who very devoutly believe in God and very devoutly worship God. And they're fine performers. And they're good performers. So it's a hard question to answer.
I know it is. Do you feel that the church has any vital effect upon field of entertainment?
I think it always has. The church, in the beginning, was the cultural leader.
That's right.
At the culture, it's gotten away from that a little bit now. But the church still has a great deal to say.
Well, the church has as much to say as it ever had to say, but the question that seems to come to me again and again is whether the church is really giving leadership anymore, or rather the church is looking to the secular world for leadership.
No, it's not giving leadership like it used to, and often it's not giving leadership like it should. Now, I came from a little church called the Moravian Church. It's a little church.
I know it.
And in Bethlehem, find them mostly in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and down in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. There was one church up in Mount Airy, and this was a wonderful thing. Mount Airy was a small town with a lot of factories and mills and stuff around, and then farming around on the outside of it. And we had no high school band, no glee club, nothing like that. So I saw a moving picture called The Birth of the Blues, and I saw a man play a trombone, and I had to have a trombone. And I ordered one from Spiegel Catalog. And I had it for 2 months there, and I didn't know how to read music. I just knew how to play. I played the old Rugged Cross song. It's the only thing I could play. And then I heard about this preacher, Ed Mickey, up at the Moravian Church that had a little church band. All Moravian churches have a band, a brass band. And I went up there, and he taught me to play that thing, and he taught me all the other instruments. And in this case, this little Moravian church, I got to give that church credit. It is still very definitely a cultural leader in its community. I can't say that all churches are, but now, like, you got these wonderful things about community choruses, and it's just that they ought to do it more often. They have a big choral sing at Easter and at Christmas, and that's about it. They ought to have it more often.
You've played the part of an illiterate hillbilly a good many times, I know. What's the appeal of this?
Well, the hillbilly or the rube or the naive fella people have always enjoyed seeing that, and they can in a lot of ways identify themselves with that, because we've all been in strange situations where we didn't know exactly what to do and 9 times out of 10 did the wrong thing. Now, I've always played that kind of character. I've always played a southerner and a mountaineer or a westerner, because I come from that part of the country, and I know that best. I don't mean always a dumb hillbilly, but at least a southerner. I know that.
Of course,
that
underneath best. The whole thing, the hillbilly isn't dumb the way you portray him.
No.
I mean, he's got a lot of human qualities,
That's
and he's learning
right.
all the time.
That's right.
What are the satisfactions, Mr. Griffith, that you get from your work?
My satisfaction?
Yes.
I always wanted to be in the entertainment business, the industry. I always wanted to be in some phase of it. First, I wanted to play a horn, and then I learned that I could tell a joke, and then I fell into acting, stuff like that. And it's everybody wants to express himself, and if a man who wants to express himself real bad finds that he can do that and make that his way of life, it's a wonderful thing. And I don't know what I'd do if I wasn't in this business.
Thank you very much, Mr. Andy Griffith, for having us here in your theater dressing room and giving us your viewpoints on these matters.
It's my pleasure.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed personal interview with another distinguished and well-known personality, produced as a public service by the Division of Radio and Television of the Protestant Episcopal Church. Today's guest was Andy Griffith, popular star of stage, screen, and records.